User interface design is filled with examples of instances where companies and people have invented things and they just feel good. People like them. And we're not really sure why. And it takes time for researchers to essentially dissect what's actually going on to figure out why we like them. So, for instance, one of the things we know now is that the iPhone felt good when we first used it. But this wasn't the first time we'd seen touch before, right? We'd seen touch with Windows phones before in the past, compact iPad devices, all sorts of other things. We have since discovered, essentially, or we now know, that one of the reasons why the iPhone felt so good was because there wasn't a lot of parallax. Parallax is what's is caused by the glass on the screen. So where you touch sometimes looks different from where the system actually thinks it received the touch if there's a lot of parallax or if there's a very thick piece of glass in between. With the iPhone device, it was one of the first ones that really didn't have much of a piece of glass, like i.e. the glass was quite thin, and this felt good. The other part of it was that the system was extremely responsive. And this is one of the reasons why the iPhone ended up succeeding. Another related example, to me anyway, is the original Nintendo. The original Nintendo Entertainment System actually ran at 60 hertz in terms of its input. And in terms of its output, it couldn't do 60 hertz. But one of the reasons why the controls felt smooth in some ways was because it was actually responding at that rate. So it's kind of cool. Direct manipulation is another one of these examples. Historically, I'm not really sure whether people knew why things were good at the outset, but I do know that we have a better articulation and understanding of why direct manipulation is a good thing now than we did at the outset. So I'll get into this a little bit, right? So next slide, just some learning objectives, right? I want you to be able to describe what the benefits and drawbacks of direct manipulation are, define what engagement and distance are in the context of direct manipulation, and then a couple of new terms, gulf of execution and gulf of evaluation, and then semantic and articulatory distance. All of these things have to do with engagement and distance, and of course, direct manipulation at the end of the day. If you have the next slide, what I'm going to talk about to begin is basically what direct manipulation is, and then I'll get into what direct might actually mean. Okay, so if you take a look at the next slide, Windows icons, menus, and pointers, WIMP. Most of the operating systems you have today actually operate on a WIMP principle. That is the desktop ones, right? So we have Windows, where a window kind of runs a self-contained program isolated from other programs, if it's a multi-program operating systems, and they run at the same time as other windows. So this is what you see on OS X, Linux, and your windows, right? Icons act as shortcuts for actions that the computer performs, so they're kind of execution tasks. So when you click on an icon, it does something. A menu is a text or an icon-based selection system that allows people to select and execute programs or tasks. And then a pointer is an on-screen symbol that represents the movement of a physical device that a user controls to select icons, data elements, and so forth. So WIMP, as it's known, this is the predominant scheme on kind of desktop operating systems. Of course, it's a little bit different when you think about your phone, right? Your smartphone doesn't have a pointer, right? Your pointer is your finger, but that pointer is not represented on the screen. Anyway, so for practical purposes, I think you can think of most of our graphical user interfaces as being WIMPs for the most part. But the main lesson here is, and this is one of those heuristics that we talked about in the past, it's easier to find things or recognize them than it is to remember things. And WIMP actually realizes this idea, right? So every action is an icon, right? You can't do things that you can't see. It's basically impossible. And and WIMP actually exemplifies the direct manipulation paradigm. That is, that there are things that you can click, you can manipulate, and this is direct manipulation. So, if you have the next slide, direct manipulation is a researcher-originated term. So, basically, people invented GUIs or WIMPs, and then people liked GUIs, and so we need to figure out why it was that people liked them. What we know now is that what it comes down to is that GUIs, what makes GUIs likable and effective is that they enable direct manipulation. Okay, so I've basically just kind of hinted at what direct manipulation is, but it's probably best to think about this as a means of contrast, right? So if we go back in time a little bit, and actually you can still do it today, but if you go back in time a little bit and hit the next slide, the copy command was something that you'd do frequently, and you would be doing it at the command line, right? So to copy a file from one location to another, you'd actually type in copy, you'd type in the file name, and then you'd enter in a destination. If you were going to copy multiple files, and this is obviously on DOS, if you were going to copy multiple files, then you'd go copy and then file 1, file 2, file 3, and then the destination needs to be a directory at the very end. You can copy files to devices. So, for example, you can send it to a printer or you can send it to the console. And what it would do if you send it to the console, obviously, was just dump the output. If you send it to the printer, then it would actually print it out. And basically, there's very little feedback after one of these commands. In particular, it would just give you another prompt. This the equivalent Unix command, which you probably use every once in a while, is, of course, the CP command. So some of the things to notice here is that you don't actually get to see anything, right? You don't get any result. You don't see the result of the action. You have to remember everything from scratch. You have to not only remember the command, but you have to remember the file name and the destination. You have to remember these as strings, essentially, right? So there's a certain level of indirectness going on here, if you will. If you hit the next slide, SQL queries, also kind of common, right? And you've probably written some of these yourself if you've taken a database class. In this particular example, you would imagine that this is some kind of database for goods, like shopping goods, kind of. And if you were to ask the question, which companies sell everything that Walmart sells, then you would actually execute, you know, you'd punch in one of these queries and then execute it, right? List the companies such that there does not exist an item sold by Walmart that they do not sell, right? I mean, you can construct this query in a bunch of different ways, obviously. But some of the keys here are you have to remember everything from scratch, and you need to construct this entire sequence of actions from scratch. If you hit the next slide, there's a video link here. It takes you to Edge Maps, which is a pretty cool video. You should take a peek at it. But basically, this is Edge Maps is kind of an exemplar of direct manipulation. And what I'm trying to do in this slide is compare and contrast your manipulation of files, say, on your desktop, versus the manipulation of files at the command line, right? So if you think about the kinds of things that are different in these two different types of examples, in direct manipulation, you have icons that you can see, you have a pointer that you can manipulate. Computer actions are represented either by icons or by manipulations that you do with your pointer. And in contrast with the command line, you have to enter everything in yourself. You have to remember, like I said, the command. You have to remember which file you're going to act on and also the destination. And you have to construct these things manually. And so there's two things that are different here. One is how direct is your interaction with the device, and what is your level of engagement with the device, right? So if you hit the next slide, this is sort of the definition of direct manipulation in terms of GUI mechanics. One, you have a continuous representation of the object of interest. That is that the thing always exists. Like typically what we mean here is visually. It always exists visually. The second thing is that physical actions or labeled button presses are used instead of complex systems or complex syntax. So copying a file is the example that we've used so far, right? So you could either say cpfoo.txt /home/tonyt, or you could actually drag a file icon into my home folder, right? So these two manipulations, the first one's obviously command line, the second one is kind of direct manipulation, right? Something you see in a GUI. The third principle is rapid, incremental, reversible operations whose impact on the object of interest is immediately visible. So that is, you can actually back out changes. So if I was dragging a file icon to my home folder, I could drag that thing back out, right? Other examples of direct manipulation are when you are able to essentially move a slider and the representation changes as a consequence of your moving the slider, and vice versa. So if you think about Word, and you know, let's say you highlighted some text, and you change the font size, it changes as a function of your manipulating it, and you can reverse that, right? The output representation can be operated on as input. So same thing. So if we think about the file moving example, when I move the file into the folder, the file sits there in the folder. And that's the output, basically, right? That's the output the system gives me. But that's also my new input space, right? So if I want to manipulate that file again or another file on the folder, I can do that, right? Right then and there. Same deal with Microsoft Word, right? I can manipulate the font again, the font size immediately. Okay, so some benefits. Next slide. So some benefits of direct manipulation. It's obvious, right? Novices can learn this stuff a little bit more quickly. For example, through demonstration. They can also perhaps learn through kind of poking at things and exploring things. Error messages are rarely needed in comparison to a command line, right? Actions are constrained by the interaction syntax. So you can design the interaction such that things that don't make any sense, don't work. I think I talked about this example in the past, but imagine you know, your scroll bar on the side of the window, right? It is possible for you to push, like if you're dragging the scroll bar, it's possible for you to drag it outside of past the top or past the bottom. But the interaction constrains that, right? It makes it look like this is the end. You can't go any further than this, and any extra input is basically ignored, right? Third thing, users can immediately see if the actions are furthering their goals or what they're trying to do, and if not, they can change the direction of their activity immediately. There are some weaknesses. So if you hit the next slide, here's an example of some weaknesses, right? So in this particular example, what I'm trying to show is that the command line interface is very effective for symbolic manipulations, right? So I can do manipulations on a variable named X, right? And also, I can also specify complex actions right at the command line. In contrast, if I'm doing this on kind of a GUI calculator, this is far more challenging to do, right? Or think about moving multiple files or renaming multiple files, right? Some of these operations are far more easy to do at the command line because you can sort of script it, sort of. So if you take a look at the next slide, these weaknesses are articulated, right? Direct manipulation is ill-suited for abstract operations, and it can be tedious. So manually searching a database versus doing a query. And so actually, if you take a look at the edge map example, this is an example where it's actually querying a database for you, right? And it's visualizing the database query right on the spot. So it's tedious, right? So direct manipulation is tedious, though. It has an inability to deal with variables or semantic symbols. With direct manipulation, the other challenge is that the user is responsible for doing everything. But some tasks are actually better if you delegate it to the computer. So for example, spell checking or repetitive actions, right? This is very tedious. Furthermore, moving a mouse around can be slower than pressing function keys to do the same actions, right? So for instance, it's easier to press Control-C and Control-V to copy and paste, I think, than it is to kind of right-click, hit the context menu, and that sort of thing. If you hit the next slide, here's another formulation of what directness means in more abstract terms. So in pseudo-math terms, right, directness is equal to engagement and minimal distance. So you want to have minimal distance to have directness. And so engagement is essentially described as a feeling of power or control, right? Distance is the effort to communicate or execute one's goals and then to evaluate the system's state. So this is important. Distance has two factors here. One is the effort to communicate or execute one's goals. So the effort it takes for me to tell the computer what I want it to do, and then the effort it takes me to understand whether the system actually did what I wanted it to do. Right, so if you think about gestural interactions, right? Think about a game like like the Star Wars Kinect game, for example. In principle, you would have a good feeling of control, but there's a problem sometimes with communicating what you actually want to do to the system, and then sometimes it takes a while for the system to respond, or it doesn't respond at all, right? Voice interactions are other examples of this too. If you hit the next slide, here's an example of kind of something where you have kind of poor engagement, where you don't have that feeling of power or control. So imagine that you know, you're talking to somebody and you're having them do something on your behalf. So you're actually delegating the task. So here in this example, the guy is actually saying, delete the report to this other dude. And the other dude actually does the deletion. And if it takes a long time, you don't feel like you're in control, right? So in the second frame, that guy's like picking his nose. And then the last frame, the guy says, delete reported, right? So or report deleted. So the amount of time it takes, you know, what did I want to get done, and is it done the way I expect it to be done? These are factors that are related to feelings of power and control over the system. If you hit the next slide, here's another example of engagement where I don't feel like you have good control, sort of. This is, you know, if you hit printer preferences on Windows, you get a dialog box that looks like that, or dialog box that looks like a little bit like this. I always find it kind of difficult to understand what's going on. And in particular, if I want to have a double-sided print job and maybe I want to have multiple pages per sheet, this is kind of like having engagement in terms of what you would like to have done. You are essentially telling someone else what you would like to have done, and the system lets you know whether something actually got done. So you're kind of actually delegating it to some other entity. And this makes me feel, at least, that I'm less in control of what's going on. So I don't feel as engaged. In contrast, another way to think about this is locus of control. Do I feel like I'm in control, or does it feel like the system is in control, right? And in this particular screenshot here, what you're looking at is seeing kind of a series of screenshots of somebody dragging something into a box. And in this case, of course, I'm in full control of what is happening to the system. Next slide. I would argue that this notion of engagement is not a static one, right? It changes as a consequence of experience. So whether you actually feel like you're in control sometimes is a matter of whether you have used it a lot or whether you have a lot of experience. I'm showing a picture of a first-person shooter here, Black Ops. And when you play the game for the first time, if you don't have a lot of experience playing this type of game, you'd feel like you're not in control at all, right? The system is in control, or somebody else is in control of what's going on here. As you develop experience with this game or this tool in principle, you feel like you have more control over time. So if you hit the next slide, then this distance thing that I've been talking about, right? This notion of control, this is related, but separate from this other notion. And I talked about distance in the past. And so if you look at this slide, what's happening here is there's a physical system on the left side, and then there are your goals on the right side. So you are represented by the thing on the right, okay? The system or computer is represented by the thing on the left. You can be substituted with user or whatever. Now, there are two gulfs. There are two spaces between the goal and the physical system, right? One is the gulf of execution. The other one is the gulf of evaluation. The gulf of execution refers to your ability to express what you would like, or your goals, or your intentions to the system, right? That is the difference between your intention and basically it executing. That's why it's called the gulf of execution, right? So if you think about Black Ops, it's a great example, right? If you're not used to playing this type of game, right? Okay, I want to turn around and trying to figure out which button actually makes this happen. That gulf in the beginning is massive, right? Over time, as you gain experience playing the game, that gulf shrinks, right? Your ability to execute, right? Or your ability to express your desires. Similarly, gulf of evaluation is the other way around. So just because the system did it doesn't necessarily mean that you can figure out what actually happened, right? So it's related still to you, though, right? What is your ability to understand what the system is communicating to me, right? So obviously, if it kind of gives you a confirmation dialogue, there's a great example of it trying to shrink that gulf of evaluation. If you think about most Unix commands, where if it executes successfully, it gives you nothing. Over time, of course, you learn that this is a good thing, right? This tells you something that actually happened. But at the outset, your ability to understand what happened is actually quite poor, right? So this gulf of evaluation, your ability to evaluate the system outcome in particular, is quite poor. So the other thing so hopefully that makes some sense. The other thing that's really important here is that it's about a two-way dialogue between the user and the system. That is, it's a two-way thing, right? So on the one hand, It does have a little to do with a person's capacity, what their reaction is, their eye-hand coordination, knowledge, but it also has to do with the system's capacity to speak the user's language, right? That's a heuristic, and in particular, that's related to Gulf of Evaluation, and perhaps also Gulf of Execution, right? If it is using the language that I know, it's easier for me to execute my tasks or my interests, and efficiency and expressivity. So one of the examples I like to pull up, if you have the next slide, is Zork, right? Zork was kind of one of these classic text-based story games. And, you know, you take three moves and you're eaten by a Gru, right? So I would say that in this case, one of the challenges was that it was really hard to figure out how to play the game at the outset. There's a huge gulf of execution, right? I don't know what commands actually are going to work. I would argue that there's also an issue with the gulf of evaluation. Can I understand what the state of the system is? Right. In contrast, if you look at King's Quest, that's the next slide, and in particular later iterations of King's Quest, these are games that are also story-based, but they use graphics and direct manipulation to basically tell the same types of stories. And the other thing is that these types of games kind of lower that barrier. They lower that gulf of execution. They shrink it because they make visible all the things that you can do, right? The icon changes, right? So in this case, you can see that the cursor is actually an arrow, but when you actually kind of lifted it over the door, it might turn into kind of like a hand turning a knob that would indicate that you can go inside the door, for example, right? It also reduces that gulf of evaluation. You can actually see the system state reflected in the GUI. Another way to think about distance, if you hit the next slide now, is that it's about communication. And people have talked about this distance in two ways. One is semantic distance, and the other one is articulatory distance. Semantic distance essentially means, is it possible to say what I want to say? And can it be said concisely? Right. So in a GUI, can I say repeat this action multiple times? Right. In a console, can I do this? Right. So in a console with a command line, I would say that it's a little bit easier to tell the system to repeat my action multiple times. And so this is one of the issues with direct manipulation. It's very difficult to tell the computer, hey, I want you to repeat this action multiple times, precisely because it is direct manipulation. I have to repeat the action multiple times, not the computer. The second thing is articulatory distance, and so this refers to how difficult is it to sort of physically express these meanings, right? And both of these things have to do with the limits of a language. So if you're familiar with multiple languages, you know that there are certain words, like if you're multilingual, you'll know that there are certain words that you have in another language that are very difficult to express in say, English or French or something like this, right? You know, there's this story about how, like, oh, you know, the Inuit have 20 words for snow or something like this. It turns out, actually, that's not true. But in principle, you can understand the basic idea, right? That there are singular words that describe 20 different kinds of snow. This gives you a lot of articulatory power, right? So there's less distance to explain certain concepts, right? In English, we would need to say, oh, it's wet snow. Oh, it's kind of dry snow, but with granules or something like this. It takes more effort to articulate that basic idea. So how difficult is it to express the idea physically? How many key presses, in terms of a computer, this would be how many key presses, how much do you have to move the mouse, so on and so forth, right? So we would say, typically, with direct manipulation, that the articulatory distance is quite small because you're manipulating a mouse, and it's quite easy to do. But the semantic distance for direct manipulation device or direct manipulation interaction is typically quite poor, right? So there's a lot of distance. If you hit the next slide, this is a picture of David Garrett, who's a kind of violinist that plays kind of hip electronic kind of stuff. It's really cool stuff. In contrast, you can imagine trying to build synthesized music with the tool on the right. So you would argue here that they have differential semantic and articulatory distances, right? That is, in particular, let's talk about articulatory distance. For some musical idea, it's probably quite easy for this David Garrett to actually express those ideas on his violin. In contrast, it takes you a lot of a lot of time, even if you're good at it, to manipulate all the little sliders and all the little dials to make that execute on the right side and with that music composition device. Finally, if you hit the next slide, there's another way of viewing interaction. So this is kind of a complex diagram, so I would encourage you to kind of examine this and think about what's going on here. But what you'll see, of course, is that semantic distance and articulatory distance play a role in both gulf of evaluation and gulf of execution, and also that relationship and conversation and dialogue between the user and the computer. And so the issue is, of course, that these are not always in sync with one another, right? So the gulf of evaluation might be different than the gulf of execution. So if you think about, for example, when you're playing with or you're calling into one of these phone systems and it's asking you to press numbers to kind of move through a menu system and it is responding through voice, right? You have different modalities here, right? You are using kind of this numbering thing and it is using kind of this voice thing to respond to you. That's why listening to voice menus is such a pain in the butt. There's a huge gulf of evaluation and a huge gulf of execution. Not allowing me to express what I want to express, this is a gulf of execution, or making me wait for the entire message, this is a gulf of evaluation. But on some systems you can, in contrast, there are some systems where you can say one or two word thing to trigger a particular menu, right? And so this is a better way of doing it, I think. But of course, it's always, in principle, easier to talk to somebody else because that gulf is minimized because we're using the same modality and they can understand what I'm saying, right? So this is the gulf of evaluation, gulf of execution. You can also see how semantic and articulatory distances play into a number of different scenarios. And in particular, what I've tried to do is introduce you to direct manipulation. Thanks.